Cliff, Colorado, in the community building early in 1967. The subject of the discussion, or interview, is Mr. George Griffin of that community. Doing the interviewing is Mrs. Riggs of Westcliff.
This afternoon, I'm going to talk with George Griffin, who lives on Oak Creek Grade. Is that the correct terminology?
Yeah, that's where most people put it.
Okay, and you are a native of this area. Were you born right here on this ranch?
No, I was born in Canyon.
In Canyon. But you've grown up on the ranch.
That's right.
And would you tell us, or do you mind telling us, what the acreage is of your ranch?
It's about 6,500 acres of ground.
And on that, you run cattle. What else?
That's all cattle.
That's it. Just yeah. Cattle. You don't put up hay here?
Some.
But not too much?
No.
Now, let's try to get a little bit in history. Has this changed over the years? Did your grandfather, for instance, put up any hay?
Yes, more than we do now.
Why?
And more acreage in these bottoms that hasn't washed away along the creek.
In other words, erosion has been a real big problem.
That's right.
Could you tell us a little about that and why we have so many big gullies around here?
Well, I think that on this place, my granddad straightened his creek. I mean, instead of letting it zigzag around in its own course, he straightened it down through here, and that'd give it too much fall.
I see. So you think by straightening it out, really caused the big problem. What is the creek, George?
It's Oak Creek.
Oak Creek, okay. Mm-hmm. I thought it probably was, but I thought we better get that on this little recording.
Yeah, after he changed it, he saw his mistake, all right, by changing it. It started to cut.
But there wasn't anything he could do about it.
No.
Mm-hmm. Now, your grandfather homesteaded here?
Yes.
Or came in and bought?
He homesteaded down right where those old buildings are down there.
Okay. And how much did he homestead? Do you remember?
No, I don't. I imagine 160 would have been all he'd have been allowed to homestead.
And did he build up most of this large acreage during his lifetime?
Well, about half of it.
And then your father?
My father and myself. I homesteaded here.
Oh, you homesteaded. Mm-hmm. And what year was that?
In 31, I believe. We moved here in 34.
I didn't realize we had homesteading, you know, in your lifetime, because you're not very old. Why don't you tell us your age? We should get that.
I'll be 54 this month, 25th of this month.
Okay. can you tell us anything else about the big changes that you've noticed or that you know have happened to the ranch from your grandfather's time to your time?
You mean that?
Other than the erosion and the fact that you don't put up as much hay.
We don't get the moisture we used to. Snow.
Okay.
That's the biggest problem, I think.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a very isolated place, right?
That's right.
And do you recall anything that your father or grandfather had to say about big storms in this area? Or how long they might have been when they couldn't get out?
No, I never heard him say.
How about during your lifetime? You ever had any,
yeah,
like a week long?
We were snowed in here 10 days at one time.
Okay. What about the cattle now? I know from talking with the Sparlings that it used to be all open range.
That's right.
During your grandfather's time, right? And how far did you go, do you know, on this open range?
Well, it went from the river, clear to Gardner, clear to Wolfenau.
The Arkansas River,
mm-hmm,
to the Wolfenau River.
Yeah.
That's quite a ways.
Yes.
A lot of miles. Did the beef have any fat on it after they'd run all that way?
Well, there was lots of cattle then. They just run from here. Well, there was cattle all over this country then.
What was the maximum number that your grandfather had? Do you recall?
No, sir, I don't. I don't. Was I ever heard him say?
Was it up in the thousands?
Oh, I imagine around 1,000, yes.
And what about roundup time? Can you tell us something about that?
Well, they had one in the spring and the fall.
Why in the spring?
To brand the calves.
Oh. So they had mostly winter calves?
No, the calves would come in the spring, you see.
Okay.
They'd be small calves in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
In the fall, they'd gather them and wean the calves.
And did they then take everything home after they'd rounded them up? No.
No.
What'd they do? Just turn them loose?
They just run the range.
They probably just took then what they wanted to sell in the fall, right?
That's right.
The fall roundup. And you probably, what did you do then? Drive them to Canyon City? Or?
I think most of them were loaded at Florence or Westcliff.
This was probably during the era of trains in Westcliff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What is the, what do your cattle graze on most? What's the?
Grammar grass.
The grammar grass. Mm-hmm. And now you spoke of having them out on the range all winter. Do you still do that?
No.
Why not? That's a big change, isn't it?
Yes, well, this BLM won't let you. It's all under government control now.
And you rent, what, for 3 or 4 month grazing period, is that right?
It was 5 months, I believe. Let's see, May, July, May, June, July, August, September, 6 months.
6 months. Now, is that talking currently too, George? Can you have it, can you have cattle on, can you graze at all on the BLM?
No.
No, not at all.
We got 100 head per mill on the BLM.
And what did you used to have, enough to take care of the whole herd?
We just used to turn them out and take the whole herd.
Oh. This is very desirable because it's always been a rather small rental, right? I mean, grazing.
Yes.
And now, without having it, it's pretty rough, right?
Yeah.
Okay. how many cattle do you have?
Oh, I have about 150 cows of my own, and then the girls have got a few, and Jean runs a few.
Mm-hmm. And oh, they run over the 6,500 acres?
Yeah, we run them all together.
And do you have to round them up in the fall?
Yes.
And bring them all in, then what do you do, feed them during the winter?
Yeah, and run them on our deeded ground.
Mm-hmm. Do you have to do much feeding?
We have this winter.
Is it normal, though?
Well, no, not usually. We don't have to feed too much. Along from about February till middle of May is about all we feed.
Mm-hmm. But with the drought conditions and so forth,
yes.
Of course, this runs into more problem. Can you raise enough hay to feed your cattle through?
No, we have to buy a lot of hay. And we put up a lot of hay in the valley on shares.
Which is, when's your biggest work time? When do you have to do most work on the ranch?
Oh, that's a year-round job. There's no most to that.
Just constantly something needs,
that's right.
Needs to be taken care of, right? Okay. Do you recall anything much that your grandfather told you about his early life in the Oak Creek country?
Yes, it's all right in that paper there. You can read it.
You're not going to tell me a thing,
no, because it takes a long time, and I... But yeah, it's all there. From the time he came to Canyon.
Did he keep a diary or anything?
No, yeah, right up here.
Right up there. Mm-hmm. I've run into a couple people that have had diaries, and boy, it really helps, you know.
But he could sit down and he could tell you that story tonight. Mm-hmm. And he could tell somebody tomorrow night exactly just the same thing.
Very same thing.
I've heard him tell it ever since I was a kid, you know, lots of times. And when I was a kid in school, I took Colorado history. And I've heard my granddad tell a lot of that Colorado history that was just in that book, just like he told it.
Mm-hmm. That's really a fantastic memory, isn't it? How old was your grandfather when he passed away?
86.
And how about your father?
He was 30 years younger than I am. in 1984 now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
84, and he's been dead 10, 12 years. He's been 72.
Mm-hmm. Round in there, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you recall any of the stories about the Oak Creek grade when the stagecoaches came up this way?
Well, I've heard them tell a lot of stories about it.
And Mr. Sparling informs me that now it's really a boulevard, that it's really a top-notch road, which I don't quite agree with
well,
him, but
I
he
don't
told
either.
Me.
I know when we used to maintain it with the horses, the grade was in better shape than it is now.
Mm-hmm. Now, when was this? When you didn't hire county men, but every rancher went out and worked on the road?
Well, my dad was road overseer on this road for 30-some years. And he worked the ranchers, yes, just weren't ranchers around here.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Sparling worked on the road down here for my dad.
What'd they call that? I can't, there's a terminology, wasn't it? Something about,
I don't know.
Paying off the debt that way instead of paying taxes is what amounted to,
no,
right?
No, they drawed wages.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, the county paid their wages.
Oh, well, then I'm thinking of back before
They
had a county maintenance probably on roads.
Yeah, no, they paid wages when, as long as Dad had it.
He did that as well as ranching, right?
Summer work mostly in the summertime.
When did they do most of the changing on the Grape Creek? I understand this isn't some of them, of the bends and so forth are relatively new.
Well, I think the last big change in the, on this road was the last change that was made on it. It's really changed the road. It was made in 1927. They could put it on the north side of the creek and done away with two bridges.
Hmm.
I think Mr. Farlow, I know he worked on that deal.
On that one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What about wildlife out in this area?
Oh, there's more now than there was when I was a kid. Quite a lot.
More deer? You don't have any elk down here, do you?
No.
Antelope haven't found their way.
We had a few elk on top of this mountain 2 years ago for a little short period, but they didn't stay. I think they was all
migrating.
Yeah, killed off in deer season.
Oh, they shouldn't do that in deer season.
No, they shouldn't.
They shouldn't do that to elk, period. Of course, we don't get such a high elk kill.
No.
There aren't any Rocky Mountain sheep down here, are there?
No.
There's grouse, that type of thing.
Yeah, we have a few grouse.
But no more, no big increase, right?
No.
In those. Okay. One thing I would like to ask you about, Mr. Griffin, is the brands and the significance of brands. Why they're still so important?
Well, for identification of cattle.
I realize that, but do you know anything about the reason that they were developed? The original, of course, to identify, especially when you were in open range and everybody ran together. Why have we always been such a source of pride in the ranching?
Well, I don't know about that.
How long have you had your brand, would you know?
I've had my own ever since I was 2 years old.
Okay, now why did you get it at such a tender age?
Well, my folks, that's when I started in the cattle business. My dad gave me a cow and a brand.
What is the brand?
U Triangle.
Okay, and you still use that?
I still use it.
What was your grandfather's brand, do you know?
2 Z's. I have that and I still use it.
How many brands do you have?
Well, I just have the two now.
Just the two. Your father didn't have one.
Yes. And I got it, and then I let my grandson have it. That was my granddad Hodges brand.
So it's still in the family.
Right.
And I bet you would almost miss a couple of meals before you'd let those brands go, right?
That's right. I wouldn't.
You would?
I think they're two of the oldest brands in Fremont County, or Custer is one.
Mm-hmm. And so, like I say, this is sort of a source of pride, too, isn't
That's
it?
That's right.
Right. Tell me a little bit about the cattle and how they've changed during your lifetime.
Oh, they're bigger and just better quality of cattle.
Better meat?
I don't think so. I don't see that there's any difference in the meat.
Oh, okay. Not any more tender?
No, I don't think it would be it.
Okay. How about the cattle themselves? Are they better rustlers now?
No. Absolutely not.
Why not?
Well, I don't know, really. You bred them up, got them heavier, and they just won't take these rocks like they used to. They get sore-footed, and then they won't get out and graze.
Well, and don't you think maybe you look after them a little more than
yes.
your former...
I think they're pampered a lot more than they used to.
Mm-hmm. How about horses? How important are they?
Well, you need two or three good saddle horses, but not as many as you used to.
How many do you have? Three?
Two.
Two, okay.
Yeah.
And all your life, I'm sure, you've had your own personal horse, right?
That's right.
And nobody else rides?
Oh, I let neighbor ride him, or one of the grandkids, or some of the relation ride him.
But you're pretty particular.
That's right.
You wouldn't let me run out and jump on him.
No, because I don't think you'd get along too well.
Tell me a little bit about your terrain down here. Like I say, I see all these gullies and gulches and so forth. Is it a little rough to get over in places?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you have very many box canyons?
No, I don't think we have any that I know of, really.
What's your deepest gulch, do you suppose?
Well, Grape Creek's the deepest canyon, and it's around this part of the country.
How deep is that?
Oh, I don't know. It ranges from, I wouldn't know, 400 or 500 feet, I guess, would be probably the highest place on it.
That's pretty deep, isn't it? Now, is this where the narrow gauge railroad went right down, down the bottom of the gulch, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And how close was that to you?
It's about 3 miles west of us.
I see. Okay. Betty, do you have an intelligent...
Well, have you asked him about the early days of, well, when his dad was young and the freighters stopped, and all about the freight stops that... Any of that history stuff?
I don't know anything about freight. Tell me.
Well, you did have, there were freighters here. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Freighters stopped here, and the, did they have a stagecoach?
Well, I don't know where that,
here?
Yes, there was a stagecoach through here, but I don't know where the stage stopped, really.
Mm-hmm.
But I would imagine it would have been down here at the Creek Place.
Where's that?
Well, that's just below our fence, on we go out down the canyon. That, I think that was the biggest stage station on the line.
Well, what about the Bassett freight line? They hauled ore through here, didn't they,
yes.
to the canyon?
Yes.
And did they stop out here, stop here at your place?
I've heard Granddad say that one load, Bassett himself, it was one load of ore, stopped there at the old house and stayed all night with him. When he come back, Bassie told him that load of ore, netted him $60,000. Four horse load.
That must have been a little tricky on some of these steep grades, right?
That's right.
Did they have an armed guard with them?
I don't
you
think
know what
so.
They didn't
the
have an armed
guard. Driver and Bassie was always with that load.
And he didn't even guard at night?
No.
My word.
He asked Granddad if he thought anybody bothered, and he just told him to pull it up close to his bedroom window there, and if anybody touched it, he'd hear it.
And that was it.
That was it.
Well, I've always heard about the old maids out here having a stage station. Do you know, did your folks know anything about them and who they were?
No. Yes, we knew them.
You knew them. And who were they?
One of them's name was Fleming, and I think the other's name was Furness.
Oh, they weren't sisters?
Yes.
Oh.
But one of them had been married.
Oh, one had been married, I see.
Haven't been dead, Betty, too many years.
Oh, really? Did they live to get
Canyon?
Yeah,
they lived there on Griffin Avenue in Canyon.
When did they die? I expect they lived down there after I went down there, huh?
I imagine. I have an idea they was there after your grandmother
moved there. Well, I would have liked to have met them.
Were they colorful characters?
Well, they was two women that run that ranch.
They had to be rough.
And they had an Ian and...
Well, I don't really know.
They didn't have...
I don't believe they did.
I don't know. I was always under the impression that they sort of operated a restaurant or, people could stop and put their horses up at night if they didn't.
No, I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that.
What about they stopped here a lot.
And Jake Benner up here had a stopping place.
What do you mean by a stopping place? What did this consist of?
They place to put their horses and then they'd feed the man and you get a meal.
And my grandfather, after he came out here, the upper country, sort of made that better staying place at night.
But they was Jake Venner and my granddad and then Creek and then Sorters and then Stelzes. They all kept graders.
Was this Yorkville School the first school here in the district?
Yes, I think so.
What is it?
Is that the name of the little red school
where
you taught?
Little log school up here, yeah. Well, when did they start that?
I don't know.
Doesn't have a date on it either, does it?
No. Of course, that could be, you could look in the records and can't.
But I think that schoolhouse up there where it is now was built in 1910.
1910. That was the first school my mother taught.
Yes, I imagine.
And then she went back to Kansas and taught before she came back out again. But that's the first place she taught was out here.
You mean the same schoolhouse where you taught? Later?
I'm sure it was, wasn't it, George?
Yeah.
Well, then she came out here and taught again after you were in school.
Yeah.
When was it closed? What year?
No, let's see. In 1956.
1956.
Jean taught there in 1955 in the spring of 1956, and then she went to town in 1957, and that's the last school we had. My dad went to school in a house that's set right over there where that house sits.
Over here at the...
Where Jean lived.
Now, where was Yorkville?
It's right before you turn off the main road to turn in the lane.
In the lane here. And how big a place was it? Was it a post office?
Yes, it was a post office and a saloon and a grocery store. And I don't know how many houses.
But supported a mine?
Yeah, they had that.
Where was the mine?
It was gleaning someplace.
What kind of ore? Gold or lead?
No, it was just gleaning lead.
Gleaning lead.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a town at Galena, too, wasn't
it? Yes.
And how big was it?
Oh, I think it was just a store and a saloon, probably.
Oh, was that the old Wolf's place?
Yeah.
Why, does Galena lead, is it a special type of lead, or what?
Yeah, it's different. It's printer purity,
Sure.
It's very soft and all the gel. It's really printer pure stuff. Not hard like that. The LC lab is a little white, hard stuff. And this looks just like green lead. It's just what it looks like lead.
Do you have many prospectors in this day and age, people that think they're going to...
Oh, yes. Not so many in the last year or two as there was 5 or 6 years ago.
They used to be Herald the Spring, just like Robbins, didn't they? It was spring when they were prospecting.
Well, that was during the thorium and the uranium.
Well, all of my life.
Oh.
Even the vermiculite days.
Well, we never have too much of that vermiculite down here.
No, not too much. But I mean, all of my life, the prospector was a...
Came out in the spring.
Not the cat's swallows.
Or the car salesman.
But when I was a kid, I can remember a lot of them, those fellows those brands belonged to.
Yes, well, of course, a lot of these names I recognize because of the Custer County history.
I bet you do.
And of course, this very first one on the first page is the Ballman Hook deal, T7. It's real interesting.
Now,
I've heard the name Catlin. Catlin was president, but I don't recall where or why I've heard it.
Then the executive committee, did you get that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
George's grandfather apparently was the chairman of that one.
Chairman of the But I've never seen a brand book like that at all.
When was this published?
1899 in West Cliff, I believe it's.
Yeah, by the Wet Mountain Tribune.
By the Wet Mountain Tribune.
Right.
Uh-huh. Now, this Dr. Bell in Gazette Building, the Springs, is he the one that founded, that promoted was the promoter to get West Cliff going?
No, I don't really know.
You know, he was met, the Dr. Bell from England was the one that was mixed up in the railroad somewhere.
Well, it could have been.
And his grandson, or great-grandson, was out last summer.
Well.
From England. Mm-hmm. And that Mrs. Griffin Shrimpton, well, her parents' name, you know, that was from England over here. That Armstrong, Mrs.
Yes.
Shrimpton, her parents' name, they're Griffin, was
yes.
Griffin. Did you ever meet them?
Oh, yeah.
Well, she lived just a few miles from West Cliff on the Sea. I'd always looked for it on the map and never could find it. And I thought that was just a fairy tale about West Cliff being named for that place in England. But she said it really existed.
I went over there fishing over at Armstrong's when they were there. And Kenneth wasn't there. I asked her to be all right.
The little boy died after they moved back to England.
Oh, they did.
With respiratory cold or something that English fog didn't agree with him.
And I asked her if I could fish, and she said yes. And she said, who do I tell Kenneth in there? I tell him, oh, George Griffin. Well, that won't be hard to remember. She said, that was my name before I was
Well, about Tom Tobin, who was a colorful Colorado history character, it says here something about your grandfather being well acquainted with him. Where did he live?
In Canyon, I think.
In Canyon, uh-huh. And
he was more or less a scout. He was all over the state, wasn't he?
Well, I think perhaps he was, but now, is it actually true that he carried the Espinosa's heads in his ink?
That's right.
Is that right?
I've heard Granddad tell that a lot of times. I think it tells in there, doesn't it?
Well, I haven't found it, you know. I mean, just glancing through. But I just wondered if was just really true or if that was just a good story for the history books.
Granddad, I heard him tell that a lot of times. They was tracking the Espinosa, and his men that was with him got tired and was going to quit. They thought they was too far behind. And he said, well, he wasn't going to quit. Today they weren't very far behind, and he kept going and didn't go too far till the men heard a couple of shots, and pretty soon here he come back down the trail packing them men's heads.
Mercy. What kind of, was he, it seems to me like it'd take quite a hard individual to do that, even to an Espinosa. Was he?
Well, I don't
was
know.
Was he out of character when he did that or not?
No, I imagine he's in his right mind.
You think he's in his right mind? Did you read the article this winter by Espinosa's grandson that lived in Trinidad country? Well, he felt that they were justified in a self-declared war on the whites, you know, because they,
Hi.
Well, there's Albert. Captured their women, and so they just went out after every white from then on was fair game, you know. And that was his story, now how true that was.
Well, I believe Tobin was the only man them Espinosas ever shot at that they didn't kill.
That they didn't kill.
That just went through the brim of his hat and just cut a little crease in his vest.
Is that right?
They were shooting off a ledge.
Mm-hmm.
down at him, and I believe it was Tobin. That that's...
Well, did the, was it the state governor that put the, had the price on their heads, or what was
know.
It? He got a reward, didn't he? That's
no,
why
he got a reward.
That's why he took the
head.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
He didn't want to bother to take them all.
Too far to pack them.
Well, I would imagine they had different ideas. They'd have wars over people mutilating the dead, you know.
Yeah.
But they were different people.
Rough.
This Father Dyer, it says, your father, your grandfather became acquainted with him, that Methodist preacher that used to make the trek from Fairplane around, and he even went to Montana, I believe. Now, was this when your folks lived up in your great grandparents that lived in Fairplane in Leadville?
Yeah.
Your
yeah.
grandfather.
Yeah.
Now I knew your grandfather. I mean, I vaguely remember him when I was a little girl.
And it was his parents.
His parents that were there.
And him too. He was with his. That's when he was a kid. He plastered mine with his folks. And
Father Dyer then was a snowshoe preacher that went through there.
Instead of a circuit rider.
Now, was one of your grandparents a preacher?
My, it'd be my grandmother's father.
Your grandmother's
father. Her name would have been Shepherd.
Shepherd. A Methodist preacher?
He was a
Methodist
preacher.
And where did he have, where did he preach? Here around this part of the country?
Yes, I think he preached here, and then I believe his grandmother was born in Central City or else at Kokomo, now one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Where did Minnie Haw-Haw go to school?
Black Hawk.
That's where grandmother went to school with her.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
What was your grandmother's name?
Shepherd.
Mm-hmm. Well, your people, the Griffins, came from North Carolina?
Ohio, I believe, Betty.
Ohio. And
did they bring cattle with them when they came?
No, I don't think so. No, I know they didn't own what they was driving. They was driving oxen.
And how soon did they get interested in the ranching?
I think about 65.
What kind of cattle did they have at the beginning, do you know?
No, I know.
Longhorns or?
Yeah, I think most of them come out of old Mexico.
Spotted ones or probably most any kind, right?
That's right.
And Betty spoke the other day about you used to winter cattle down here. They'd bring them in from other places to winter here.
Yeah.
Now that sounds strange to me now.
Oh, it does. It really does.
But you had that much milder winters?
Yeah.
And they could always find something to eat, right?
That's right. These south slopes, the snow don't lay on them too much.
It doesn't take nearly as much to feed a cow out here as it does in the valley, does it, George?
About half.
Hmm. You mean grammar grass, is that good?
That's right.
It has the high protein grass.
That's right about that.
And you can fatten, especially in the fall after it seeds, you can fatten them just like they're on corn.
That's right.
And the ground here isn't leased out from irrigation either when it rains. It produces, and it's far far more nutritious than your hay.
Oh yeah.
Hmm. How about that? I learned something.
You don't believe it.
No, it's a good thing I came, so I could learn something.
And then too, the grass is more nutritious, and then the weather is milder than it is in the valley. And it takes a lot more feed where it's cold and that wind blows,
right.
And where they don't have any shelter than it does out here.
Right.
What's the shelter?
These pinyon trees and these little draws that you get in out of the wind, because the draws run every direction. Well, wherever the wind blows, they always got
the natural wind breaks.
One they can get into.
They're smart that way, right?
That's right, they sure are.
Mm-hmm. They learn.
Your grandfather or great-grandfather, I saw the name Uray. That Uray lived with his tribe in Canyon up to 1875. and that your grandfather, Mr. Griffin, is that your great-grandfather?
I don't know.
Knew Uray, said Mr. Griffin knew Chief Uray very well.
Oh, that was both of them.
Your grandfather and great-grandfather.
Yes.
Now, there's another, a relative of yours, Mr. Shepherd, I think you called him Uncle Ian.
Yes.
Well, he told a story about going to the valley with the Germans. And did they come up over Oak Creek?
Yes.
They came through Oak Creek, didn't
yes.
they? And the thing that I remember that he told was that they, and I don't know why a German had a bagpipe, but he was talking about them playing bagpipes.
Yeah.
And did he lead them in here, or was he just along?
Why, he was just along with them.
Just for fun. But they came over Oak Creek.
And I've heard him say lots of times he even carried a horn, but he couldn't play a tune. But he carried a horn.
I have heard in doing these interviews now, I've had those people come in from all directions. The last one told me they came up to Pueblo and up the Huerfano River and in through the Gardner country.
Why would they go from Pueblo to Gardner?
Don't ask me. I think they helicoptered them in here, if you want to know.
No, I'm sure they came through Canyon because Uncle Ean's folks was living
in there. They camped down there, didn't they? That was a story he told me. They camped down there in Canyon, or down there in that country.
Well, you see, the Shepherd's homesteaded on Lincoln Park.
Yes.
That's where Dorothy lives there now. That was part of their old...
Was that part of their...
Yeah, that on the abstract shows that goes back to the Shepherd.
To the Shepherd's.
Well, of course, now maybe we're talking about two different branches of this German thing. The one I'm speaking of is the one from Chicago.
Well, I don't know which one he was with.
And then I understand there was a migration straight from Germany. Is that right, Betty?
I don't know. The only migration I ever knew anything about was the one from Chicago.
And that's the one you think...
They came from Germany, and then they came... Mm-hmm. They came on to Chicago, and they named their first colony Colfax because there was someone, Schuyler Colfax, who was had a high office in Washington, and I think maybe he had something to do with the Department of Interior. I'd have to look that up. But anyway, Colfax was named for him.
Oh.
But,
well, there should be some really good stories about this Oak Creek grade and traffic on it.
About what?
About Oak Creek grade and traffic on it. Surely there was a wagon or two that went over.
Oh, yes. I've heard Dad speak.
Mrs. Bobby went along.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband, I imagine, or her... I read the other day of a Baldick in Coal Creek dying, and I'm not sure it was connected to that. There was a connection to one of them. Remember that backed a horse off down here above the picnic grounds, wasn't it?
Yeah.
On that little high point there.
Yeah, right across, you might say, just inside the bridge.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
She backed her horse off. Did it break her neck?
I think it did.
She broke her neck, and killed her. And she was the wife of one of the West Cliff Baldicks.
She'd have been Lyle Baldick's great-great-grandmother, wouldn't she?
Well, I suppose so. And then some of her people moved to Coal Creek because there's a girl in that family that teaches, and I've met her at college in various places, and she's a relative of the woman that went off the...
And I've heard Dad talk about a freight outfit went off of, you know what you call Cape Horn down there,
yes.
That sharp... corner. His brake rope broke and he went straight off over there.
That sounds like a pretty
good
drama.
That was a good one, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And then there were a few automobile accidents on Oak Creek, too.
Yeah, but you know, there's never been but one or two real serious
no.
ones this side, from this side of the grave, or from the other side of the grave to this side.
The one I remember was the man, wasn't there a Davis family that lived up here? Davidson.
It was his brother-in-law.
Well, did he get killed?
No, he killed the other two men.
Oh, he killed the other two men. There was hunting season with them,
mm-hmm.
and they drove off in the fog.
They drove off over Cape Horn, too.
Uh-huh, off Cape Horn.
And he rode that car clear at the bottom.
And he didn't, it scalped him, didn't it?
It scalped him. It did his hair, hair was all laying out on the back of his head. His name was Lawrence.
Yeah, I remember.
He was a brother-in-law, Dave.
Yeah. Well, Alma Jay rode a car out there too, didn't she?
Yeah, but that was furniture to put on the other side.
Oh, on the other side.
Would you mind marking this Cape Horn, and I will go slower, you know.
I'm at the last sharp corner going down the grade after you're going down the other way.
You mean toward Canyon?
Yeah.
Towards Canyon,
oh,
the last sharp.
Yes, I can believe that. That is quite a grade, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that we were only supposed to have such and such percent, but I think that goes a little beyond.
Well, the steep part is up just right over the cattle guard, really,
yeah.
According to survey. That's supposed to be a 19% grade there for that cattle guard.
When you're going up and it's slick, you believe it too, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people put chains on there, don't they?
Some of them don't like me.
Now, this is my dad, too.
Yeah, her husband come along and pulled me out of there one time when I was sure glad.
Who did?
Dan.
Oh, did he?
Yes. It's been 5-6 years ago. Well, Mother was still alive.
Didn't know quite what you were doing down there, right?
But Dorothy drove to high school over that, didn't she?
Yeah. Well, and Donna drives it every day, twice a day with the kids, right?
Yeah.
Nice to get them down at the bottom of the grade where it's really no trick to drive.
Well, and then the school board says it's too dangerous to come over the grade. Children with a butt, and there's been more accidents
on the other side
to Canyon than there ever was this hole on the grade.
Remember when I was in high school, the kids that got killed on the other side of the grade? Because see, Blythe Knapp up killed, and then the Sketty kids, and all those kids that got hurt. Well, they got down the grade. They put, they had the brakes out of the car, was why they got, why it all happened. And so they blocked the car with rocks all the way down the grade, and knowing the brakes were out, they had to be speeding. Because I have taken my car out of gear at the top of that Dobie Hill, and it cannot pick up enough speed by itself to wreck. Because I've tried it, you know, and they were just, must have been going like the wind. But anyway, they got it down off the grade, and that always seems such a miracle to get it off the grade and then get some of them killed after they got down there.
Yeah. And just if they'd made that one more corner, they'd have been all right.
They'd been all right.
Mm-hmm. That was Bill Berry's boy that was driving the truck.
Yes. He was the most notorious driver we ever had in high school. And, you know, that parkway used to be in front of the high school down there, and he'd just go round and round every noon. I'm surprised he didn't wreck down there on Main Street, instead of coming up here in the mountains to do it. Oh, it was terrible.
Why do you think we don't have too many wrecks on, well, pretty dangerous roads, George?
I think people just drive more carefully.
They respect those mountains, don't they?
I think that's very true, because we get down on the flatlands where they're about 70 miles an hour, and we're forever having big wrecks and so forth.
But most people, there's... Especially tourists, when they get in the mountain, they don't drive as fast.
The only trouble is they want to hug that bank something awful and want you to hang over.
They don't always want to stay on the right own side of the road on the curves either.
Right.
They're afraid to get out.
They come too fast around the wrong side of the road on curves sometimes.
Yeah. I have a rifle in here that belonged to my great granddad. He brought it out here with him when he comes from Ohio.
What is it?
It's an old muzzle loader.
Muzzle loader?
Double barrel.
Doesn't have a brand name.
Yeah, it's got the color and the name on it, B.C. Wood.
Oh, have you ever fired it?
No.
Would you be afraid to fire it?
Yeah, I sure would.
You wouldn't even know how to start loading it, would you? I wouldn't.
They say all you have to do is put a cap on it. It's already got the lead and the powder in the barrel.
Oh, really? Have you always kept that up pretty high away from the kids?
That's right. It's terrible on the wall,
Because that doesn't sound like anything to fool around about, does it?
No, but it's sure a nice gun. It's in perfect condition.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What kind of guns do you use now?
Oh, I've got 22 and 30-06. I don't use any of them.
But men have to collect them, is that right?
Oh, yeah, you always got to have one or two.
Mm-hmm. What, was either your father or your great-grandfather a hunter? Really enjoyed hunting?
Oh, my granddad did, and so did my great-granddad. Dad never cared about it.
And evidently you don't much either.
No, I used to hunt a little. I haven't hunted for 47, fall of 47.
You had a big deer hunt over here that day.
Yeah, the last one, the last year I went hunting.
George, I can't find it now, but there was, I think perhaps in here, there's something about a murder at the cheese factory in Westcliff. Do you know anything about that?
No. I don't visit anything in there about that day.
I thought it was this paper that I saw. I thought maybe you could tell me about it.
I don't believe. I don't ever remember hearing Granddad say anything about it.
I wish you could think of that, or we could track that down, because someone else made reference to it. No, I read it in something about the history of Custer County recently. And it made some reference to the untimely murder of so-and-so at the cheese factory, you know, and that's all it said. So now that's a good mystery, and we're going to have to trace it down.
Oh, in the 70s, a cheese factory was started in the Wet Mountain Valley close to Westcliff. It was in charge of a basker by the name of Reginald Neve. And his family were friends of a family by the name of Price. They had a son named Theodore, who was the black sheep of their family, and had been in South America and in trouble there. And his family asked the Neve family if Theodore could not come to Westcliff and be with his sons. Consent was given and he arrived. Well, he stayed there for a while, and then one night, this Price stayed there for a while, and then one night when the men were having a smoking and drinking party at the factory, much liquor was consumed, Price taking more than the others. During the evening, some of the men had laid their pipes down on the table. Price picked them up and placed them in his pocket, then laid his head down on the table. Neve wanted to smoke, and seeing his pipe in Price's pocket, reached over and took it. Price woke up and asked what he was doing. Neve replied that he was just taking his pipe. Price said, "You'd better be careful how you put your hands in a gentleman's pocket. That gentleman might get nasty." And Neve answered that he didn't care how nasty he got, so he Price got up and walked out of the front door. He was seen to pass the door a few times, then called to Neve to come out, saying, "Come out here, old man, I want to talk to you." Neve hesitated and went out, and he immediately came back with a folding dirk knife in his hand. He was trying to close and remarked, "He's cut me." He walked on through the house and fell headlong into the back door dead. He'd been stabbed through the heart.
Well, sir, I don't remember reading that in there.
Price came back in the house and made the statement that he had thrown the knife but had not stabbed me. Later on, in the night, when he had sobered up a little, he said, "I've cut many men, but this is the first time I ever cut a friend." In his trunk, they found many dirk knives, which evidently had been used in other affrays. He was brought to trial. George Griffin was called for jury duty but didn't serve. However, he attended the entire trial. Tom Macon, an attorney from Canyon, aided in the prosecution. He had been a close friend of Neve, whose friends paid Macon $1,000 for his services in the case. Price was defended by Henry Teller, later senator from Colorado, and an English barrister who was sent over from England by the Price family, who were very rich. Tom Macon, to the surprise of many, did not ask for the death penalty. Price was found guilty and sentenced to the penitentiary for life.
Well, I don't remember.